This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 463, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
When you walk through the garden, gotta watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon, walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, he's gonna save your soul.
Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 463. My name is Paul Montgomery. Joining me, Mr. Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And Joshua Flanagan.
Here.
Did you just vomit something up? What happened?
Turn into a frog.
That's Snoop.
Oh.
From The Wire.
Oh, right.
It's a little deep. We are iFanboy, and we like comics, and every week we read a bunch of comics. That's it. And one of us picks the best book they read. We call that the Pick of the Week. Talk about it on the show and do some impressions from The Wire, along with other books of the week, various other topics of interest, and other goofy nonsense. Before we get to the show, quick reminder slash warning, this is a review show, and we will be talking about the things that happened in this week's books. So if you're worried about the spoilers, you can pause the show, you can come back,
and we'll be open
arms.
Quietly.
Are you having some sort of slow burn stroke?
Quietly.
I can't do Bunk saying quietly.
Paul,
instead of Jimmy.
Do I have to pick
Jimmy?
Paul?
Jimmy!
Quietly!
Do I have to pick Paul? Was that
sounds
where
like
are?
Cartman. It doesn't sound
like I didn't say I could do bunk. It. I'm trying. This is all experimental stuff.
Connor,
you guys want to do the show?
I have the pick, and the pick was the Multiversity Pax Romana number one. And I'm just going to admit that I'm in the bag for when Morrison and Frank Quietly team up. I'm not even going to say that I understood this issue 100%.
I'm really happy to hear that.
I'm just saying I loved every page of it. And this is actually this is the first issue of the Multiversity we've had as a pick of the week, but this is probably I loved it. This is probably my least favorite one.
The last one was really good.
Well, I've loved all of them. I really loved the pulp one with Dr. Fate, and I loved the last one that you guys talked about. It was a really good one.
Yeah.
They've all been fantastic. Actually, no, I'm sorry. The first issue was my least favorite.
Yep.
I loved this issue. That tells you how much I've loved this series so
far. What's funny is that this was a surprise for me because I didn't know. I've been downloading them. It takes effort to see. I was like, oh, right. I just don't notice the Multiversity titles, so I have to make sure I don't miss them. Mm-hmm. And then it was after you'd made the pick of the week, and I downloaded. I was like, oh. Oh, it's Frank Quitely as well.
Well, what's funny is these are the pages that they originally teased with for the series, mm-hmm. right? If you right. recall at Morrison yeah. Con that our old pal Ron Richards did, that's where they announced this series. And they do you remember they gave us a couple of pages to preview, and one of them was the first page, which was nothing.
No.
Do you remember that? It was the cover. It was this cover they gave us the art for, and we were like, all right, that doesn't do anything for us. You have to give us
something. Yeah, cool, else. Fire.
Let's give us something else here.
That's vaguely familiar.
And then they showed a couple of these Blue Beetle pages at the con itself, and that mm-hmm. was the big tease 2 years ago. So that tells you how long this series has been being worked on. So this is actually Morrison quietly doing, and you know, every issue Multiversity has been, if you're not reading it, Morrison's trip through the DC multiverse. And they're all very deep with references and characters, and this is Morrison and Quitely doing basically Watchmen. This is the original pitch for Watchmen, which was the Charlton characters. So you've got Blue Beetle instead of Night Owl, and you've got Captain Atom instead of Dr. Manhattan, and you've got Nightshade instead of Silk Spectre, and The Question instead of Rorschach. So you've got, this is basically him doing Watchmen. Excuse me. And you know, like I said, I'm not going to pretend I understood everything, but I really enjoyed the journey through this world, and also these two guys work together better than... There's no one that works together better than these two guys.
Here's the tragic irony of this podcast. I'm sitting at my desk, and right in front of me, there's a lozenge, and I just want to reach over the internet and hand it to you because you feel so miserable. It sounds so miserable. This was awesome.
I woke up coughing this morning. I don't know what's happening. I might be dying.
No, it's... And just it's the page layouts the are crazy. The thing that's cool is that it's like all of Watchmen
yeah.
crammed into one issue. So yeah. they're doing a lot of stylistic things. But it's not just like a hokey pastiche.
No, not at all.
You know, it's like taking the original concept. And then there's a little bit of a, you know, like a wink-wink to some of the stuff from Watchmen that, you know, you only get through the filter of Watchmen, not just by going back to the Charlton characters. So... You know, that's kind of fun, and that's the stuff that Morrison has said over the years about Watchmen, even in his book and stuff. And so you know that there's a little bit of, I don't know, professional rivalry going on there. Totally. So that's pretty fun to watch on the pages. But the last panel, like, blew my mind. I was like, wait a minute, that's a domino mask twisted, you know, yeah,
it's like a DNA strand.
Yeah.
I also, just from a craft standpoint, there's a lot of great sequences in here that recall the great All-Star Superman, which is probably the pinnacle of these two guys working together in terms of just artistic capability. There's that wonderful page where they're walking, and that one really reminds you of All-Star Superman, where they're walking and talking like they're almost like they're in a Sorkin show.
Yes.
And you just see them throughout all the entire page as they go, and that reminded me a lot of that Superman, also Superman jail issue, where he goes to see Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
Specifically... I'm sorry, I don't want to...
No, go ahead.
It was is a really good example of how to successfully break the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Because that shouldn't work from a the way the comic book pages work standpoint. And from a lettering standpoint, those are they broke the rules. You're not supposed to go right to left. It makes it hard to read. But at no point was that page hard to read.
Right.
And I think that's really interesting. It's just there's a way to do anything well, you know, whereas most people can't.
Also, I was reminded some of the fight scenes recall their Batman and Robin stuff that they did together. Mm-hmm. Just really great teamwork from these two guys. And I would pay anything for them to do a Blue Beetle question book set in this world. Because just in the Watchmen book where Rorschach and Night Owl were so great together, here Blue Beetle and the Question are so great, and seeing Quietly draws a really mean Question and a really mean Blue Beetle.
You're so far in the closet, you pay rent in Narnia. It's just...
I like the undercurrent, the subtext of all this, too, is that if you know, you've ever read about what Morrison thinks of Watchmen,
mm-hmm.
it's not favorable to the extreme. I mean, like, he likes the craft of it, but I feel like his thing was that it went too dark and too nihilistic and you know, basically was it lost the joylessness that comic books is what he believes they should have. So that's sort of in the back of my mind as he's doing this, which is it's almost like he's talking to Alan Moore a little bit.
Well,
like,
I don't know if it's almost. I think he is a little.
Yeah, I know.
A guy's never going to hear it, but still.
No, he certainly not. I bet he reads them all.
That'd be really funny. He just has long boxes everywhere.
Yeah.
All those interviews he does, and then he turns around and he's like, he's alphabetizing and he's back.
But he's also got like, he's got like notebooks full of his responses that he writes in them, and they're long. Like this is like two notebooks. This issue. Like he does annotations.
Like really tiny serial killer handwriting.
Yep. Exactly.
So the thing is, and I've seen some comments about this, is that you can totally enjoy this and still love Watchmen. And we've had that discussion before about it.
Of course you can.
It's not a black and white thing. Like, I still love Watchmen. I can also enjoy the fact that Morrison doesn't love it as much, and this is his response to it and his version of it. And I can, they're both great. They both exist independently, and they're wonderful. And I just keep looking at these shots of the question that quietly did. And I mean, as much as great as the story was, it was. And I have to really reread it. These issues. You have to, for me, I read them a couple of times because there's a lot of stuff going on. But this one particularly was pretty dense.
There's one of the things about all of these issues so far, and this one in particular, is that as soon as when you start reading any of them, you have no idea what's going on.
Right.
Like, you have to know that going in. Like, if you start going, I don't know what's going on, you have to read it. You have to give it time. And then as you sort of start to go, you're gonna get what's happening to a certain extent. This one was, I think, a little tougher. I think it really was like, and I know the Watchmen really well too.
Yeah.
So the fact that I was still like, hold on.
Wait a
like
minute.
There's just other stuff happening. I loved the Captain Atom stuff. That was my favorite.
Like, yeah.
The way that he did it, you know, they're keeping him drugged and you know, like his, that page with the bridge, his fearful symmetry page, basically.
Mm-hmm.
That was a whole bit of, that was a bunch of magic.
This whole series has been a bunch of magic, I think.
Yeah,
I think we've seen. There's a lot of evidence that you just let Grant Morrison run wild in his little world. That he does really wonderful stuff. This reminds me a lot of Seven Soldiers, and I think Seven Soldiers is a really unappreciated, underrated thing that he did, because he got to both play in a world that was all his own and had no rules, and at least continuity rules, and had, you know, do whatever he wanted with those characters, and it was a really magical thing. I think this is turning into that same kind of thing.
Yeah, well, same thing as anything though. Like, he's gonna get more sales on Batman IP because it's Batman and Darkseid, and that's
listen. All the people complaining that Ted Kord is gone should read this issue.
It's just great that there's something really insightful and super considerate on each and every page, both from Morrison and from Quitely. And you get like the deconstruction of the dog, which made me think of like We Three, and then. I keep going back to the domino mask that looks like a double helix. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to, like, who thinks that when you take a domino mask and lift it up and let it dangle and twist, it looks like that? And that's a recurring motif in the issue. And that's just not the level of thinking that most people are doing writing or reading a superhero comic. So
I feel like they put in, like, I feel like it was a conscious level of effort to put in an Alan Moore level of detail and thinking on every panel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you're listening home, you know what I'm talking about. Like Alan Moore's famous for super detail in script, and it, like, you know, every single tiny iota of the Watchmen is thought out and sort of crafted to death between Alan Moore and then Dave Gibbons after that. And I feel like they did that with this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's the same kind of thing. Like, there's nothing in here that is an afterthought or wasn't strongly considered.
What you just said caused me to flash back to a moment on this show, however many years ago, when Batman and Robin came out. And I remember distinctly saying, this kind of book makes you angry that all other comics aren't this well thought out.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you feel like there's a whole waste of energy going on. And I realize not everyone can do that, but it makes you see the possibility of a really well-considered comic book put together.
That's true, but I also don't want every comic book to be like
that. And I don't mean the density of it, because Batman and Robin wasn't that dense, but it was really well constructed and thought out in the characterizations and all that stuff. It just, you know, you realize how many of these are sort of, how many things these things you read are sort of throwaways when you run into books like this.
Sure. Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, which is also the nature of
it's a serialized storytelling, and it's going to...
It's literally the nature of the art form, going back to its very beginning.
Sure.
You know, the fact that we have anything coming out of it was an evolution. But, I mean, I like some of that run-and-gun stuff.
There's nothing wrong with it.
I like both. You know, I like having that where I couldn't read this all the time. This would, if all comics were like this, at the end of 8 or 10 of them in a stack on a Wednesday, I'd be like, I'm out. I can't do it.
So this week we had a lot of other stuff going on, a lot of interesting things. In Batman Superman 16, this is really the first storyline we've had since the Doomsday epic ended. And I thought this really returned back to that feeling I had originally with this book.
I really liked this issue.
Yeah, this was a really strong issue. It's called The Nemesis Objective, or at least the cover says that. And it's basically introducing, quote-unquote, Superman's Joker. And what they mean by that is the villain that doesn't really make any sense, doesn't have an agenda, doesn't have a plot to uncover. It's just someone who's crazy. And I really liked this issue a lot. I loved... Actually, my favorite moment was a really heartbreaking moment of the whole week for me was when the issue opens up with these two actors going to a cancer ward dressed as Superman and Batman to cheer up the kids. And one of them, the one dressed as Superman, gets shot through the window. And he realizes that what's happened. And instead of falling down, and he stumbles out of the room so that none of the kids have to see this guy die. And I thought that was a really heartbreaking moment. Really,
well, he was a fatty.
Real, but it was a real like moment of heroism in this. From a,
I just try to undercut you
from a guy who's sure. not a hero, and I thought this whole issue was really strong.
This is where we get the podcast reviews, Josh.
I know. That's what I was going for.
This was a strong contender for the pick of the week.
I think the art, while not great,
yeah.
I don't think it was great art. I actually think it was more effective than the gorgeous and ethereal Jay Lee art,
mm-hmm.
In telling the story that you needed to. You know what I mean? Like, if this had been Jay Lee, like, mm-hmm. I don't think it would have been communicated to
Jay
well.
Jay Lee's art is good for a certain type of story.
Yeah, exactly.
This
so
is a traditional superhero story.
This guy, you know, he got it across. Mm-hmm. And I know I like the concept. There wasn't a reveal about who it was,
no,
right?
No.
Okay. This guy just wanted to make sure that I didn't miss a thing because I'm, you know.
No, not that I saw, but
I'm an idiot. Previously I had been ready to be like, all right, you know, maybe this book isn't for me, but I actually really enjoyed this. I thought it was a good story.
Yeah, I like the idea that
good concept
that Superman is not prepared for this kind of criminal, and doesn't want to become Batman to deal with it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always interesting when you play off their differences, and how much they both seep into one another.
Mm-hmm.
I also like that Batman's got a giant picture of the Joker at the ready no matter when he needs to make a point.
He has everything at the ready when he's. That's nothing. None of the conceits about Batman are anything other than that. Whatever it is he needs, he's got that right there. His pockets are as big as you need them to be.
I'd like a whole page of him trying to find in a bunch of folders the picture of the Joker.
But he had to do that beforehand.
Hold on, I got to make a point. Just let me find. No, it's not.
A second, Alfred. Villains. What did you do with the? Just hold on.
Arch Nemesis.
It was here.
So I thought this was really good. And then in the other team-up book, Superman Wonder Woman, we had our first glimpse of the new creative team, which was...
You did this, huh?
Yeah, and it was really good. Peter Tomasi really? And...
I'm sorry. I'm getting it mixed up with
you're
Wonder
going
Woman.
Ahead. You're skipping ahead. Tomasi and Doug Monkey, right?
Yeah, and I love Doug Monkey.
That's
Doug Monkey.
Okay, yeah, that's your jam.
Yeah. I thought... Paul, did you read this?
I did. I usually like Doug Monkey. I thought some of his faces were a little severe to a distracting degree.
Mm-hmm.
It's a scary Wonder Woman. Like, I know a lot about her skull.
Right. Well, I think that actually really worked for me in this issue because
yeah.
That's the way they go with her now, right? She's the scary warrior princess who's
this is true.
More badass than anybody else on the team. So I like that they made her more severe. She's still, you know, portrayed attractively. But she's also clearly, you know, we'll talk about the contrast in that art in a second with the next comic, mm-hmm. But
doesn't mean Atomic Skull.
Yeah.
I like me some Atomic Skull.
I loved the cover. I loved the date interrupted. I liked this issue a lot. I don't know. I think if you want, Tomasi's really good at character work, and I'm happy to be reading a book by him because he's been only really working on Batman and Robin, and I am over the whole Damian thing, so I haven't been reading his work. And Monkey's always been one of my favorite guys from the new school of artists, so I'm really happy about this new team.
Yeah, I'm gonna stick with this one too. I don't have a whole lot to say about it, but
what's the basic? Like, are they taking over what was done before, or is it a whole new deal?
No, it's continuation.
Really?
Yeah, I mean it's you know they're coming.
It's basically,
out, they're coming
what he did
the Doomsday storyline. So that's the fallout from that, and I mean it's a bit of a reset. Also, in that the issue opens with a flashback to when Superman and Wonder Woman sort of first meet, although we've seen them first meet in Justice League. But that's sort of this in between that story. So they're fighting the Parademons and they're getting to sort of banter,
mm-hmm.
and you know, Wonder Woman's not quite sure she likes this kind of doofus who doesn't want anybody to die. And so you kind of see where that first spark happens, and then fast forward. I actually really like the bit where Superman is, or Clark is, writing a story on this, on a typewriter. And it's Hemingway's typewriter that Bruce had bought him as a Christmas present. And she's like, well, why don't you just write fast? He's like, well, I can't. I can type fast, but I can't write fast. And I liked that little bit. You know, he's like typing at normal speed because he has to think. I liked that. That was kind of cool.
That's a good moment.
It was good.
I'm still not entirely, you know, won over on this relationship, but if you can sort of get over that obstacle, it's fun.
Oh, the other thing I liked was that, I'm sorry, it just took me forever to load this issue, so I forgot. I liked Major Disaster. So Major Disaster was one of those goofy 90s villains. But I always kind of liked him. And he was a guy that showed up all the time in the GIF and Justice League, and he was a guy who could control disasters, right? So he could make an earthquake or he could make a tornado. And when you think about it, and the way it's used here, that's a really serious superpower.
It is.
I mean, Black Bolt. That is no screwing around. So here, he's not quite the joke that he was in that book. He's bringing the pain. And I thought there's a lot of, you know, what can one man and woman do against nature? You know, it's not so much.
He's like he makes the world his SimCity 2000.
Right. So I like that villain. I like the relationship. I think this was a really strong issue. If you were someone who dropped off the book, maybe check this one out. You might like this one. You know, this was good. Now we go to Wonder Woman 36. Wonder Woman 36 was the first issue with the new creative team, the husband and wife team, the Finches, David Finch on art.
And M. Finch and D. Finch.
And what was interesting was this is clearly a return to the superhero Wonder Woman story, but it doesn't like wash away what happened before. In fact, everything that happened before with all the gods and everything is very heavily referenced.
It washes other things away. Coal villages. The opening pages.
Yeah, there's more Wonder Woman against nature in this comic. Did you read it, Paul?
Yeah, I did. Because I got it in the mail. There's a lot of rain in this issue and a lot of meditating on what the rain is and represents. And
I had very, very low expectations for this. So I will say it didn't quite go as low as I thought, but it wasn't good.
I didn't find it terribly inspired. Run that we just had, which had its ups and downs, it was always at least really inventive and thinking of different ways of what does it mean to be Wonder Woman, or what can we put Wonder Woman through to change that character. You know, what kind of crucible can she go through? And with this, it just feels kind of like a six-issue, arc between, two bigger runs.
I'm totally fine with them going back to Wonder Woman, superhero Wonder Woman stories, which is fine. We just did 3 years of the Vertigo stuff. And so I, as a change of pace, I have nothing wrong with that as a concept. But, like, I don't know that David Finch is the right artist for this book. All of his faces were sort of blank.
I know that he's not.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't cheesecakey, but it was like all the facial expressions were blank.
Yes.
And mouths looks hanging
like,
open. Looks
like dolls. Like she looks like a, like she has sort of a young, like a really youngish face sometimes. And so it has this sort of like doll effect, like Barbie doll kind of thing.
And tell me if you laughed when I laughed, Paul, but there was one. So in the beginning, there's a crisis. So the Justice League is called in and there's a 2-page spread of the Justice League. And they're all just sort of standing shoulder to shoulder, staring off into the distance. And they all have the same exact sort of expression. Like Superman, Aquaman, and Wonder Woman all just sort of look like they've been drugged.
They do. Superman looks terrible.
It's like, first of all, this was really disappointing art-wise. And the writer, first of all, I think it's good that it's a female writer because a female writer doesn't have to be on this book. I think it's a good perspective change.
Mm-hmm.
But she's also a very new comic writer, and you can tell.
Yeah.
But you'd think that he would be, David Finch has been around a while. He's worked with a lot of great writers. You think he'd be able to, rein that in?
I don't know. It's just... Well, not as bad as I feared. It wasn't very good.
Yeah, Superman looks like somebody burned his Elios.
It doesn't.
Burned my bagel bites. Why did you do that?
There was that. If you were all curious about the new run of Wonder Woman, listen, if you're the kind of person that really hated the Azzarello and Chang stuff, then perhaps this is.
Yeah, I mean, this brings back, you know, it's like the Justice League, and it's just, you know.
I'm fine with that as an idea. In fact, I was welcoming it. I just wish it was a different creative team. That's all.
Yeah.
So there you go. Black Widow 12.
Anderson Cooper comes to visit.
Anderson Cooper.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the thing that I wanted to mention with this is that, you know, we used to see Phil Noto.
To make things in this country. Oh, sorry.
Very nice. Well done. His name is not his name.
Phil Noto's really good.
That's what I'm getting at. Yeah. Like, we originally saw his art. He was a cover guy. He showed up in some stuff here and there. You're like, man, those are some beautiful covers. And then there was those sketches that he was doing on the internet. And he'd done work in between here and then. But my point is, originally, when you saw him do interiors, he was not there.
No.
He was doing pinups.
Panel storytelling wasn't there yet.
Right. And you go to now, I'm reading this issue and I'm watching it. And the acting...
Yeah.
That he's having his characters do, and his storytelling and his page layout and everything has gotten so good. He has just improved to be not only somebody just visually something to look at, but like the work of comic book making, like he's good at that too. And it's taken this book that I don't feel like anybody's talking about or thinking about very much, and it really is a very nice bit of craft. And it's enjoyable. It's I think it's got to be one of my favorite Black Widow series that I've read. And I remember like Greg Rucka did one, I think, at one point, you know, and I sort of read that. And there's been Black Widow series along that. I think Paul Cornell did one. This one's real good. I really like the world that they've set up and the dichotomy between who Natasha is supposed to be. Is she Avenger? Is she a spy? Yeah. Is she an assassin? Is she bad? Is she good? Is she needed? Like all those things. And you know that her lawyer guy was a marked man.
Oh, totally.
The whole time. And finally, you know. The cat paws with the blood. Good Lord. That was amazing.
I hate to make this comparison because I don't want to feel like I'm marginalizing, but it feels very much like She-Hulk. And I don't mean that because they're both female protagonists, but in that it's a book that no one's talking about, that's really small in the corner, and it's really fantastic storytelling-wise and art-wise and characterization stuff. And what they're exploring is really good.
Yep.
But it's not in that tapestry of the main universe, so no one's reading it or talking about it.
But I think which is interesting, because Black Widow was, in fact, in the movie, is
right.
You know, Scarlett Johansson.
But her story is off on its own and not being involved in what's happening with Axis and all the things that are happening. So,
but I feel like even people are talking about She-Hulk more than this.
I don't think anybody's talking about She-Hulk other than me, you, and Paul.
Well, okay. Then we weren't. You know, but it's like it's pretty good. Like, it's a good book. It's worthy of time and consideration. I can't imagine it's probably already been canceled. just because I feel like everything was just canceled. But there it is. Good stuff.
It's very good.
It's really,
I actually look forward to it.
Yeah.
It's like I read it in conjunction with Punisher, and Punisher I keep looking for reasons to stop reading it. But Black Widow I like quite a bit.
Yeah, their little crossover between the two books was really good too.
Yeah, it was. No, these are good companion books, not just because they have the same writer, but you know, they feel very much removed.
Yeah.
So there's been 12 issues of Black Widow. There'll probably be one or two collections of it. And when you want to check those out, or any of these books, or anything you want, go to ifanboy.com/Amazon. When you're making your holiday purchases, we're getting towards the end of November, right into December. And as you know, if you're an American, your patriotic duty is to shop. Until you go into debt. So do that this holiday season through ifanboy.com.
Hold on.
Yes.
Is there a way to shop without going into debt?
Are you rich?
No.
Well, there's no way.
Oh, okay. Cool. Okay. No, I just wanted to...
No, you're doing it correctly. You're doing it correctly.
Okay, good.
If you're wondering if you're doing it right, you're doing it right.
Okay, good.
So ifanboy.com/Amazon, all your holiday shopping. We really do appreciate it. Everyone who does that, it helps out everything. We got the bills, got to pay those bills, and that's how we do it. Also through ifanboy.com/registration, that's where you become an iFanboy member for $3 a month or $30 a year. And we love all you people who help us either way, keep the iFanboy spirit alive, and, you know, don't go into too much debt.
Did you when you said the iFanboy spirit alive, yeah. I pictured a small ethereal creature in a cage, like in a dark closet.
Yeah.
And he's like, and he has like sideburns. And
you meant like Tinkerbell, where you need the, or you die, you need the spirit to live.
You know what I pictured? Have you both seen Her?
Her, yeah.
The movie.
Yeah,
Her.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't think I enunciated that well enough to. Like, have you seen it?
Her.
Ooh, Josh.
Yeah. Her.
Her. You know the video game creature who swears?
Yes.
That's what the iFanboy spirit looks
That's
like.
That's exactly what the iFanboy spirit
and,
looks
and
like.
And he's in a closet and he's dying unless you buy stuff on Amazon through our code.
Buy
and then
tchotchkes.
He gets. Yeah, he gets little breaths of like, ah, fuck you. And he,
buy a Keytar and keep that little sprite alive. Keep him going.
Paul, did you buy the Batman Blu-ray set?
Yes, I did.
Did you get it?
Good God, it's gorgeous.
It's fucking awesome.
It's an event. You open it up. It's got doors.
It plays music.
It does.
It is great. I brought it into work.
It has
today.
A placeholder ribbon
for people to
for
look
the
at.
DVDs.
Yeah, it's really fantastic.
It has a ribbon so you can pull them out of their little like.
Here's my
alcoves.
Question: why does the and when you get this set, you get a little Mattel Batmobile? Why does the or Hot Wheels Batmobile replica? Why does it have a trailer hitch attached to it?
That's the sequel.
That answer's obvious.
It doesn't have one in the show, and it, in fact, would have been burned off by the little fire exhaust flame thing.
That's true.
Not if it's made of the right material.
It's a little RV for Alfred.
Does he hook up a little bat?
Oh, but like, anything you put behind it would get ruined, yeah. though, so, even if
yes.
the hitch survived.
Yeah. We were
well,
puzzling
I mean,
over
the actual,
that earlier.
The actual answer is that they used the mold from another vehicle, and they had to get them on there as cheaply as possible.
Oh, well.
But that's not really as fun.
I mean, yeah, definitely go buy that set. Don't wait for it to go down in price. Just go through the iFanboy portal.
Buy it at the highest possible price. The See if you can get one of those other sellers, and then... From that one, find the highest price.
Well, they're pricey. They're not cheap.
Get the collectible one, whatever that field means.
Do you want
there's
to
like,
kill the
there's like used or new or collectible.
Mm-hmm. Collectible do you want to kill the spirit reason. Of iFanboy? If no. not,
so Paul, Spider-Woman number one.
Yeah, so Spider-Woman number one is sort of the inverse of what we were talking about with Black Widow and Punisher. And She-Hulk in that it is very much a part of what's going on, and I think that's hurting it.
I don't even know what it is. What is it tying into?
It's Spider-Verse, which I didn't know going in.
I feel like I'm drunk.
I mean, I think the most buzz that came out of it was when they were going to have that Miles Manara cover, and then they got rid of that variant cover.
Milo Manara?
Yeah, what did I say?
Milo
Schwarman.
Whatever. Anyways, so it's a Spider-Verse tie-in.
My name is my name!
It includes Spider-Woman and Silk, who was introduced in Amazing Spider-Man and who was bit by the same spider that bit Peter and was just living in a bunker for all those years.
Down by the river.
Down by the river. And they're in like another dimension. And so it's not like... Spider-Verse, the Spider-Woman miniseries, it's the Spider-Woman series, but it's bogged down in that Spider-Verse stuff. And I don't happen to be reading Spider-Verse, but I like the Spider-Woman character. I like Dennis Hopeless. So I was, curious about this, but it's, I don't know. I don't think I'm keeping with this because I'm not interested in the...
And Greg Land vetoed it.
And it's Greg Land, so...
Well, and that was all I looked.
It's not
I was like.
It's not terrible.
No, you need two parts of the whole, and like if I don't like an artist, I don't care.
The art will really kill it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll read a book that I really like the art, don't necessarily like the story, the writing, because then you can at least get the story through the art.
You know what? And that has been a big change for us.
Yeah,
I think since in the intervening years, because it used to be like you deal with it, but now it's just what's the point?
Paul, I'm just hoping that you the more you'd say Spider-Verse, the more I'd understand, but I don't.
Nope, it's another dimension, and it's like Dune, Arrakis, desert planet. I don't know.
Did Mobius draw it? I'd buy that.
That would be neat. You could even get artists that are like Mobius these days.
As a child, I thought that I for some reason heard the name Mobius very young, and I thought that the strip was named for him.
Well, yeah. That makes sense.
And not vice versa.
It should be.
Universe number one.
Universe number one is a much better bet. That's the new offering from Panel Syndicate.
Oh, right.
So it is. Right. So way back in the beginning of Panel Syndicate, when they started The Private Eye, Brian K. Vaughan and Marcos Martin, they said we might bring on some other people. And apparently, so I read the issue and it was fun. And then I got to the back and it says, It's by this, who did it? It's Albert Montes, who is a Spanish cartoonist, and he says he hasn't worked outside of Spain, so we wouldn't know him from anything else unless we were reading like the newspapers in Spain.
I'm going to need you to say España.
España, okay.
España.
Is he undercover cop? Is he trying to hijack a truck full of cigarettes?
No. So at the end, he says that I guess Marcos Martín asked him, hey, do you want to do something for Panel Syndicate? Yeah, absolutely. I just need 2 months. And then it's been like 2 years later or something. And finally, this issue is up. And he's going to try to do them maybe not every month, but every other month.
Well, there was siestas to be had.
And that's okay. Oh, right. And that's okay that it's not going to be every month because it's not necessarily a serialized story. They're going to be self-contained little science fiction stories. And it's got a very like sort of newspaper comic strip style. It's much more of a cartoon, and it's about this guy from the far future who is sent back in time by his evil boss, who is just a floating head, to carve the logo of their mega corporation onto the particles that burst forth from the Big Bang. So they go back to the beginning of the universe. And he's going to carve this in there and change, tinker with things a little bit so that in the far future, they'll be even more rich. Even though.
I'll tell you something.
Yeah.
Europe, in addition to having very long lunches and lots of vacation time, they really have something on us sometimes when it comes to comics.
Yeah.
It's
what you've just described,
and
like.
Funny.
Yeah. That sounds amazing.
So it's sort of like a comedy version of like 2001. It feels like because he's at the beginning of reality with this little pyramid shaped robot who's, you know, telling him you got to do this, you got to do this, and he realizes when he gets there that he has to wait until the future. Like he has to live through all of time to get back to his own time, even though for them in the future it'll be just like 30 seconds and he'll walk through the door. But for him, he has to like go through everything, and he talks to the different, you know, human civilizations as they're coming up and steering them towards it. And he kind of gives like the big FU to his boss by carving something different into the particles. But anyway, it's fun. It's crazily European.
Cool.
It's Panel Syndicate, so you can pay whatever you want.
Invincible 115.
Yeah, yeah. This was a big fight. Pretty much the whole issue was a fight between Thrag, and I think this other one is Battle Beast. He's like a lion with dreadlocks, I guess, but he's a man.
He's just doing Mad Libs now.
Yeah, no, it's fine. Basically, it was a big fight, and they released some beasts at one point, and they killed all of them, and Battle Beast has a very big sword.
How was the art?
It was great is what I'm getting at.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good time. It was what Ryan Otley does best.
Yeah, every once in a while he gives Otley the chance to do a full fight scene. And that's Otley just goes nuts.
Yeah, he does, and he did, and there's lots of blood. I mean, it's what you expect. And then there's a really cool reveal at the end that I won't spoil it.
I'm a trade really, line.
I know. Really good reveal that I was like, okay, no, that's significant what you've just done there. So it was a good issue is what I'm saying. Every once in a while, I want to make sure I still read this. I'm giving them their props or proppers.
I still really enjoy Invincible. It's the book that Kirkman writes. It probably gets the least amount of attention.
Well, there's no TV show, so yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's even Outcast and the other books. So
yeah.
It's very
what
good.
Else does he write?
He writes Outcast, and he used to do the Thief of Thieves book, but that was
that's like
the
TV.
Arc.
Yeah, yeah. Last night I heard the word
Super Dinosaur. Doesn't he still write Super Dinosaur?
Does that still exist? Mm-hmm. I don't think so.
Sure.
I don't know. That was the kids' one. I stopped reading. I feel like no. I don't know. Somebody just said the word glasses to me last night, and I got wistful. For a time, I was like, oh yeah, Robert Kirkman used to call me glasses before he was the most famous man I know.
Guardians of the Galaxy 21.
He doesn't remember me.
Guardians of the Galaxy 21 is fun because Chris Pratt is still dating Kitty Pryde, and the big development in this one.
What?
If you're worried about them, clog your ears. Groot is now Venom.
Oh, Jesus.
Because they have Flash Thompson, who's the current Venom up in space. They separated him from the symbiote. The cover suggested they were going to the Venom symbiote planet. and they're going to be fighting a bunch of symbiotes, but they haven't gotten to that point yet. So now Groot is a big, leafy, Venom creature, and he says, "I am Venom," instead of "I am Groot." So there you go.
Don't like it.
Don't like it?
I don't like it.
It's not appropriate.
Not cool, man.
Okay.
Those are the books we wanted to talk about this week. I thought it was a really good week, actually. I really enjoyed my
good books.
Yeah. Go to ifanboy.com. You can find the post for this show. You can talk about these books. You can talk about other books you read. You can tell people what you liked, what you didn't like. All kinds of things happening at ifanboy.com. And now, last week we did the October book of the month. Because in November, we like to keep you on your toes. This week, the November book of the month. Josh Flanagan, Esquire.
Was I supposed to? I'm a lawyer now. Well, excellent. Excellent. Ain't no motherfucker give a fuck about a 40-degree day. All sorry. Right. I'm not
Josh
gonna
is trying to do a themed show. And it's not
I'm going to keep doing it. We were successful at it last week. It's not going to work every week. No. Was I supposed to have read this book?
You claim to have. Wanted to make it your book of the month, so I sure.
Yeah, my book of the month is Art Schooled by Jamie Coe out of Nobrow Press, which is a British publisher. And this is what I would refer to as a good old-fashioned personal sort of indie comic.
Mm-hmm.
It's the story of a kid from a small town who goes to an art school in a city. I don't even know if it was specified, if it's London or whatever, but it's in England, and he goes to the art school, and it's sort of his journal, and you kind of even find out as you're going through it that you know, like the character's project in school was to make a graphic novel comic book, bunch of strips about where, you know, his art school that he was going to at the time. And it's, you know, it's the idea of being in that age of your life, and you're in an art school, so everything is even heightened because everybody's trying to be somebody interesting, and there's you know, there's a lot of people, you know, putting on a whole image for themselves, and it's sort of super hyper realized, and you know, the critical eye of the artist, you know, that is sitting there reading, you know, reading what everybody is doing and what they actually mean, and seeing through all that facade and stuff, but while also at the same time trying to be, you know, he's a young kid, he's trying to figure out what he's doing. It's that kind of book.
Mm-hmm.
It's my kind of thing.
What's the style, the art style?
It's like a carny. It's a cartoony.
Carnies.
Whoa, whoa, it's carnies. Circus folk. Smell like cabbage.
Whoa.
Just like a cartoony style.
The funnel cake residue on the pages.
Early 2000s top shelf. How's that?
Okay, I get it.
I'll tell you what I'm talking about. Like a liney thing with there's color, which looks like it's kind of the monochromatic color at time, but there's actually more than that. There's these nice little sort of sidebar, you know, testimonial things where they ask. The first time I ever saw this was in Alex Robinson's Box Office Poison. I'm sure other people have done it, but like, there's just a page where they ask these characters, some of whom you don't know very well, a question, and you just hear what their answer is. You know, right. Like the it's like a writing experiment. Mm-hmm. Then there's a nice little bit in the middle where he goes through all the different types of students. You know, the retropunk student, the hip hop stoner student. You know, and these are all British, so they're a little bit off from what the American version would be. Which I always like that as a nerd, because that's what nerds do. They like other culture stuff, but only slightly different, so you can understand the language and buy their chocolate. You know, Ron was in England. I learned, but you know, he goes through. He makes a best friend and meets a girl and all that stuff happens, and it's like a slice of life thing. And it's so far, like when I was younger, I would have said, oh, I'm relating to this. But now I look at it as like anthropology, because I'm so far removed from what it is like to be a person in their early 20s today that it's done in the style of those comic books, but it's a very different world.
Mm-hmm.
There's still universal themes and stuff, and you can relate to it. And you were back there in the awkwardness and trying to figure out who you were going to be and all that stuff. But I really enjoyed it. I read it like a single sitting. It's
How
a nice
– it?
I don't know. It doesn't actually have page numbers. I could look it up on the thing.
How does it feel
a second.
To you in your heart?
Like 100 pages, something like that. Okay. You know, it's a little less than an inch thick.
Pretty short stuff. Look short.
Yeah, it's a nice book. It's a hardcover. You know, it's got sort of a thick, sort of nice matte paper. It's like cream colored instead of white. Until I worked for a book company now, and I enjoyed it. It's I haven't actually sat down and read a graphic novel sort of cover to cover in a while. It's just sort of one guy's, you know, opinion on things. And I used to do stuff like that. I used to do that all the time. And you know, you travel like through the years. It starts, you know, he's at the beginning when he goes to art school and he's worried his mom's going to embarrass him. He's dressing off when they're dropping him off and, you know, we love you, don't stay up too late. And then at the end of it, you know, he's graduating, people are trying to find jobs, and you're starting to see who is full of shit and who actually was the real deal at the school. And it was good. And it was also pretty, you know, like self-searching and that kind of thing, mm-hmm. Which is one thing that Indie Comics does very, very well.
I'm excited to read
this particular type. Yeah, I think you'll enjoy it. It's a nice book. It's the kind of thing that we don't tend to talk about very much around here. And it doesn't cross my, my vision very often. So I was glad to get my hands on this and read it. It's available now. And if the kinds of comics that I talk about like this, if you like that kind of thing, you're going to like this too. I've always said, like, Box Office Poison is my template for that. It's one of my favorite graphic novels of all time, and this is sort of in that vein, mm-hmm. I think.
Spring Catalog is out for No Brow, and it's drop-dead gorgeous. Everything looks awesome. So
Art Schooled.
Jamie Coe. Yep.
Cool. There's your November book of the month. Paul.
You want me to do December next week?
Yeah, why not, if you want
to. I know what it is, so.
We could. You want to knock it out? Let's do it next week.
We'll do it next week. It'll be early.
Look forward to the books of the month coming up soon. So let's do an email, at least one.
Clint, an entire quarter.
Clint from Las Vegas, Nevada, sunny Las Vegas, says, I buy comics first and foremost because I love the stories and the art, but I like the idea that one of these could be worth thousands of dollars someday. I know you guys purchase or read most of your comics digitally, and I would like to make the transition, but I'm worried that I'm going to miss out on a collector's gem like The Walking Dead number one. That issue has been going upwards of $800. I always purchase 3 or 4 copies of every Image number one. I realize that 99% of the comics I buy every week are going to end up in a quarter bin, but there's always that chance for a winner. I guess my question is, do you worry about missing out on this, or do you just shrug your shoulders and keep on keeping on? You can tell this guy lives in Vegas. He's rolling that dice.
On very low odds.
Yeah. Do they sell comic books at casinos?
I bet they did at one point.
Yeah.
Even the way he talks about it, there's always a chance
for a different kind of spinner rack.
First of all, you are Ron Richards' favorite person. Because Image puts out a lot of comics. You buy 3 or 4 of every one of them?
Yeah. And especially the number one. The number ones. There's so many.
The Walking Dead is a once-in-a-generation cultural phenomenon.
Yeah,
it's
and also...
It's not going to happen again.
It's going for $800. How much have you spent on comics?
Yeah, how many...
Put that in the 5% building sales.
What was the other one that went nuts? Chew number one went crazy.
Yeah, but not really.
But even not, and that's just not a, that was an artificial thing that was inflated by people with. Anyway, that was a whole thing. But The Walking Dead is a true cultural phenomenon, and it's only worth that much because it's a TV show, and because everyone watches that TV show, and
nobody knew who he was at the time.
The book came out, it was an unknown. I mean, right. That is not going to happen again. It happened once, and it's, in our lifetime, it's not going to happen again. Mm-hmm. There's just a very specific set of circumstances that led that book to be. And if you think about it, $800 isn't that much.
No, especially if you're buying. I mean, you could theoretically. I would say if you bought one copy of every Image comic that came out over a course of a year, you're spending more than that by a considerable margin. And if you're buying 3 or 4 copies of them, you're losing money. Like you're chasing a thing that doesn't exist anymore. And I guess occasionally, I remember there was a point where I don't care about this. I think it's. I mean, like personally, as a comic book buyer reader, no, I never think of this. That was sort of your question.
Yeah.
I totally shrug my shoulder. But every once in a while, I'll hear, "Hey, Rachel Rising," because there was a story about the thing getting adapted is selling for $100 on eBay. I sold that thing so fast.
And that's artificial, temporary, right?
Right.
That's not gonna last. There was Peter Panzerfaust number one went for a lot when the BBC deal went through, but that was for about a week and a half or 2 weeks, and then it died down again.
Do you remember there was a Jeff Lemire cover of some Valiant book? I don't even remember what it was.
Yeah, it was.
They were selling for like $100, and I was like, fine. You know, like look that up now. Like, right. I don't know who bought that or why, but it's obvious. Like, there's the collector tick that I took advantage of, I guess. Because there's no way that was going to be worth anything in any sort of long-term worth is even a variable word. But either way, those days are over, man.
Yeah.
They're over. It's not going to happen. If it does, it's not going to be worth whatever you spent trying to get there.
Right.
Like, you would be better off investing that money in a time machine.
Or a fucking IRA.
I mean, literally, if you had a 3% yielding savings account, you're in a better position than trying to make money from comics.
Yeah. It's just not going to happen. I mean, these are all great books, and there may be a temporary spike in popularity in one of them for some reason, but 6 months later, that spike will be over with, and you'll be able to get that issue anywhere.
Read comics because you like comics. Invest money in stocks and things because you want that.
Right.
I mean, I think. I don't know. I don't know how any of that works. I don't have any money because I worked in comics. No.
But, it's just not going to happen.
It isn't. It's not.
It's just not going to happen.
Next week, somebody's going to write in, I bought this new house with all the proceeds from mine.
Yeah. So there you go.
And also, if you're the guy in the comic shop looking through the things for the perfect copy, everyone hates you.
Right.
If I'm behind you and you're thumbing through it trying to find the best crease spine or whatever, I am cursing at you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So don't be that guy.
This is another quick one. Danny in Shanghai, China. We've gone global. Sometimes the lettering credit often reads as letterer and production. Do you know what kind of production it's talking about? I used to be in graphic design before I moved overseas, so I have my suspicions, but maybe you guys can offer your thoughts or have direct contact with an answer.
Yeah, I think this is, like in comics, it can sometimes mean a lot of different things. Like an editor can mean a bunch of things. Like an editor could be the person who's literally, you know, editing the content, or sometimes it can be the person who's just keeping the trains running on schedule. But for the most part, my
thought about... So the editor's like Mussolini?
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
An editor is exactly like Mussolini. That's what I'm saying.
Asking.
Comics.
It's an odd show.
Production.
It's an odd episode of our show, of our program.
Well, Mussolini started off like very well. Oh, this is the war.
He was a journalist.
What is this called? War Corner? What are we calling it?
Oh, Jesus. We almost missed War Corner.
Yeah. So this Mussolini started off as a journalist quite like, you know, comic book editing in the same realm, and then became what he became because of his experiences, and much like comic editors.
He thought that we weren't holding a tight enough fist on thing and a tight enough grip. And the trains, you know, that's a version of that. Anyway, when you talk about production in comic books, it's sort of the person who's putting the files together in the correct format to be printed. It's making sure that, you know, like if the files are flattened and they're the right DPI and it's the right kind of file format that can be read and the bleeds and the trims and everything. So when they send that file off to the printer, that it prints the right way that it was intended to, and the colors look good, and that it's RGB instead of CMYK or whichever way that goes.
So you're saying it's basically the person who takes all the elements together and puts them into the book.
Yeah, and since the letterer is very often the last person working with it, that's the guy who's in InDesign, or he's in what's the vector one that I use to do lettering? That's how long it's been. You know, not Acrobat, but there's a bunch of different ways. But, you know, he's the one who's sort of the last person to put this. Illustrator, thank you.
Illustrator.
Illustrator is the standard lettering software. You know, he's the one who's taking that from that Adobe suite into the next one and making sure that everything is the way that it's supposed to be. And then, you know, you just send that off to the printer.
So there you go.
That's what production is, as I understand it.
Wait, why do people work on the drawings in Photoshop and work on the letters in Illustrator?
So that they'll be.
Those are named wrong.
That's a good point. Listen. Illustrator is a maddening program if you come out, because it doesn't work the same way as Photoshop, but it looks like it does. So you think, oh, I know how to do this thing, and then you don't, and you just want to kill yourself because it's vector based. I think somewhere out there, I'm gonna say 50-60% of our audience knows what it is I'm talking about, and they know that I don't know. I think that they're like, oh my god, shut up. And it's like a thing that most people know. It'd be like if I was just going to sit here and talk about Taylor Swift, which most people know, but I don't know anything about. And I'm an idiot.
So email us at contact@fanboy.com or call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS-326-2697. If you have any questions, if you'd like to know about production, how things work, Josh is going to start taking how things work questions.
Yeah. You know how they found, you know how Mussolini ended up, right? Swinging from a post.
Yep.
Yep. Just like editors.
So we are officially entering the holiday season. On that note, we thought we would start giving you updates on the holiday schedule for the show. This is something that happens every year since we've been doing the show. We've been following the schedule for the most part. Next week is Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving falls on a Thursday. That kind of mucks up our recording schedule, because it's a major holiday. We're with our family. So what we're going to do is we're going to have a show next week, but it might be a shortened show. It might just be a half-length show just to talk about some of the books and then go back to our families.
It'll be trypto-fantastic.
Yeah, we haven't formalized that yet, but that's probably what's going to happen. And then you've got 2 weeks of regular shows, 465, 466. And then you'll have the all-media show on the coming out December 21st. And that'll feature me and Josh and Mike Romo talking about all the things we love in media this year. And then we're going to be on break for 2 weeks. We'll be returning probably the first week of January, although we haven't talked about that either. But so you'll be getting your last pick of the week show will be episode 466 on December 14th.
So lots of stuff to listen to while you're wrapping those packages that you've ordered through Amazon or iFanboy /Amazon.
Exactly.
No. Order the shipping or order the wrapping. In that way, the revenue counts towards our total.
Okay.
So that's the schedule. We'll drop that knowledge on at the end of every show for the next, just so no one's surprised when we disappear for 2 weeks. So thanks for listening. In the meantime, head over to fanboy.com, talk about this show. You can see past shows. You can see past special edition podcasts. We talked about some of the movies that came out recently, all kinds of things happening over at fanboy.com. You can find all of our podcasts. You can even go through, as I did the other day, look through our old shows. All our old video shows are there still. All our old content.
You know what I feel bad about?
What?
This week we got a fairly prominent plug from actor-comedian podcaster Paul Scheer on the AV Club. And this is what we did.
Yeah, well.
This show. 40-degree day.
Can't all be winners.
Sorry, Paul Scheer. You can follow iFanboy at twitter.com/iFanboy or facebook.com/iFanboy. And you can follow us individually at CS Kilpatrick, Fuzzy Typewriter, and Jay Flanagan. I'm sure Paul Scheer knows other podcasts you should be listening to because, I mean, we've let you down. You're not listening anymore if you just sort of came in like, oh, well, I'll check this out because the guy said it. You're not listening anymore. So, you know what? I don't need you.
Okay. And if you enjoyed the past 45 seconds, write us a review in iTunes, or better yet, you can tell your friends about us. Introduce all your friends and family to us over the holidays. You know, talk about
it. This is the perfect show
podcast
to play during your holiday dinner with your family. Put it on the background.
You don't want to hear
it
them.
Is.
Exactly. Or while you're wrapping presents or trimming the tree, you know, lighting the menorah.
Do you play it out?
The show in the background.
Do you play it out loud or you have earbuds in?
No, out loud.
Okay.
I mean,
they could each be listening to a different episode on their earbuds.
Can we talk about the Battle of the Seven Days now and what it meant in 1861?
No.
Okay.
It
was 1862.
So until next week, which will be Thanksgiving. I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
A lot of people didn't think that Lee was the right guy for the job, but he was trusted by Davis, which had a big deal.
I'm just going to hit stop on the recording.
I thought you were talking about
in three, two, and
I'm Josh.
One.
He's got the fire and the fury at his command. Well, you don't have to worry if you hold on to Jesus' hand. And we'll all be safe from Satan when the thunder rolls. Just gotta help me keep the devil.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.